You've probably heard the saying, fools rush in where angels fear to tread. Well, someone suggested the title for this section of Ecclesiastes as fools rush in. And I thought, no, I'll do the other end, where angels fear to tread. Sometimes we as fools do foolish things, and we rush in. Well, that's what this chapter is about, chapter 10 of the book of Ecclesiastes. You all remember Will Rogers. Will Rogers was a humorist, and he was summoned to the White House by President Calvin Coolidge, and he thought, well, what's he wanting me for? And, well, I'm a humorist. He wants some jokes. So when he got there, he said, Mr. President, would you like to hear some political jokes? The president said, no, I've hired them all. They're all there. I've heard them all. I've hired them all. So this is what Solomon's talking to us about. He'd hired a few himself, you know, and he had played the fool himself not a few times. So today he wants to talk to us about the fools that we can be if we're not careful. The word foolishness or folly is in this chapter 9 times. And Talbot reminds us that it's very prevalent out there. But you don't have to be told that. It's very prevalent in us on many occasions, I'm sure. He says that there are two ways that we can live our lives. We can live our lives wisely, or we can live our lives foolishly. And he wants us to make the choice. He's going to talk to us today about four areas where foolishness can ruin our lives. Don't play the fool, is what he's saying. He starts off with the foolish little things that can get into our lives. He talks about the illustration he gives is dead flies putrefy the perfumer's ointment. I can't talk. And cause it to give off a foul odor. So does a little folly in one respected for wisdom and honor. So what he's saying is that a very small thing can get in and take something that's really beautiful, smells beautifully, and then turns it into something that really has a foul odor. Remember he said in chapter 7, in verse 1, he said that a good name is better than precious ointment. So he likes to talk about this ointment thing. And he says a little foolishness in someone's life can destroy his name, his character, and otherwise would be a good, sweet-smelling life. Did you ever hear of a fly in the ointment? That's where it came from, right here. A fly in the ointment. Not some big thing. It isn't usually some big thing that happens to us that makes us look foolish. It's something small. You think of some famous people who have fallen. One thing that happened in their life, and he did some good things, I'm sure. But all you think about, oh, he did that. Oh, look what he did, you know. And that's all you think about. That's the one thing that messed up his life. And it wasn't a big thing. It came to be a big thing, but it wasn't a big thing at the start. So what happened to this perfume box? Well, apparently somebody had left the lid off. And you know how flies will do, something sweet. And they come and get in there. And then some mouse came along, some OC came along and said, hey, the lid is off. Got to put the lid back on. And they put the lid back on. And the flies are trapped, and they die in there. The next person who takes that lid off says, woo, thought that was a big perfume. One little fly can get in there and really mess things up. There are other examples we have in Scripture. A little leaven leavens the whole lump. You ladies who have baked bread, you put just a little bit of yeast in, and up comes the loaf, you know. Just a little bit will leaven the whole lump, he said. That's 1 Corinthians 5:6. Then the little foxes, Song of Solomon, chapter 2 and verse 15, talks about the little foxes that spoil the vine. Doesn't take a big fox, just a little fox, chew on the vines, and will spoil the vine. But I guess the best scripture is James 3. James 3 talks about the mouth, the tongue. It says, you can put a bit in the horse's mouth. That big old 1,000, 1,200, 1,500 pound horse can be moved around just by that little bit. Even a little kid like me could handle those reins and pull that horse wherever I wanted to go, because a little small thing turns a big body around. A rudder can turn a large ship, great big old ships, big old little old rudder back there by comparison. But then he says, likewise, the tongue turns the body. That little flapping thing up there, that can turn your whole body. And then he ends up by saying, behold how great a forest a little fire kindles. A little spark is all it takes, and thousands of acres can be burned by that. He also talks about one person, or we think about one person. In the last verse of the previous chapter, 9:18, says, one sinner destroys much good. Now we see what he's talking about. One sinner, one person in the camp, can cause a lot of problems. In Joshua, remember Joshua? He's the one who fit the Battle of Jericho. What a victory! They tore down the whole all those walls came down because of their faithfulness to God, and God destroyed the city. But he told them beforehand, when you go in there, don't take anything out for yourself. Don't take any garments. Don't take any gold. Don't take any silver. Don't take a thing, because the Lord, this is for the Lord, not for you. Well, Achan was one of the men who did. Achan took some and he hid it in his tent. Nobody knew about it, he thought. And it was dug under there and stuck it in there. Nobody could know it. And so when they came to go to Ai, Joshua said, we don't need many for that. So they sent a good group up there, enough to take the little city. And they got beat. And they came out and whooped them. And people died as a result. And Joshua fell on his face before the Lord and said, Lord, what happened? You took this big city, this little old thing, and these guys kill us. And he said, there's sin in the camp. And it turned out it was Achan. Achan, one man, had caused people to die, had caused the nation Israel to lose a battle. Well, that's what can happen. One little thing can cause disaster. One hand. In verse 2, he says, a wise man's heart is at his right hand, but a fool's heart is at his left. Now, I'm not going to ask who's left-handed here, who's right-handed. He's not talking about that anyway. But he's saying that the wise man, his heart is at his right hand. In other words, what he's saying is a man's heart is toward the power. The power is in your right hand. And he's just assuming the general consensus is everybody's right-handed, and that's where the power is. And the wise man's heart uses his power. He does everything that he can in order to get that thing done, whatever that is. And the fool is on the left-hand side, the weaker side, and he does not get the thing done. So a moment of weakness, he's saying, can characterize the fool. But then there's also one impression. Verse 3, he says, even when a fool walks along the way, he lacks wisdom, and he shows everyone that he is a fool. Just walking along the way, just walking down the street, and you can tell, according to Solomon, you can tell he's walking down the street. He's foolish. You just tell he's a fool just by the way he walks, is what he's saying. One little thing, he's saying, in this whole thing, one little thing can ruin a person. Have you heard the story about the emperor's new clothes? That's a funny one. Somebody came to the emperor and said, I can make you some great clothes. If you'll give me a lot of material, you give me some gold thread, and I'll make you the finest garments. In fact, they're special garments. These garments will, anyone who cannot see the garments, he will not be worthy of his office, and he'll be a complete fool. Now, so he said, okay, I'll take those. I'd love to have that. Then anybody, I can say, anybody, you see that garment? They say, no, okay, then you're not worthy to be in my office. So it's a real litmus test for people that I hire for my offices. Well, you remember, you know the story. They made the things, and the chamberlain went down to see the man and to see the garments. And they said, here are the garments. Aren't they beautiful? And the man said, he said, I don't see any garments. I can't say that. Oh, yes, there are beautiful garments. Yeah. So he goes back and tells the emperor, oh, they're beautiful, emperor. Yes, sir. So then when they bring them to the emperor, he's standing there waiting to be dressed, and said, where are the garments? Oh, they're right here. The emperor said, whoa, I don't see any garments, but I can't say that. I have to admit that these garments they're beautiful, yeah. Here, put them on me. So they put them on him, and they put the cloak around him, and he's going to be in a parade. So here he is walking down the street, and the word got out in the whole city that this is happening. You know, if you can't see that, then you're not fit for your office, and you are foolish. You're utterly imbecile if you can't see that. And so here he is walking down the street in his new garments, and everybody along the sidewalk is saying, oh, they're beautiful. The king has beautiful garments. And finally, one little girl said, he's naked. He doesn't have any clothes. And that blew the whole thing. But one little thing, say, one little lie had caused the whole nation to be liars. So one little thing then is all it takes to ruin a life. So foolishness in little things. There's also foolishness in leadership. Now, you're going to wonder before I get out of here, how I know your boss. How do I know your boss? He's in here. And maybe if you're a boss, you're in here. I'm not in there. I don't count. Okay. Foolishness in leadership. First of all, he talks about the ego-driven leader in verse 4. He says, if the spirit of the ruler rises against you, do not leave your post, for conciliation pacifies great offenses. He's saying, if the leader abuses you, man you're working for, then he thinks he's the only person there is. I'm the big cheese, and everything is my way. Woodrow Wilson said, every man who takes an office in Washington either grows or swells. Whenever I appoint a man to an office, I watch him and see whether he's growing or swelling. Yeah. Well, this is one way that he could look at it. So this guy is a ruler with no self-control. You know, Solomon said in the Proverbs in 16:32, he who is slow to anger is better than the mighty. He who rules his spirit better than he who takes a city. In 25:28, he says, whoever has no rule over his own spirit is like a city broken down without walls. Well, then what do you do when the boss rises up against you? Well, Solomon says, don't panic. Don't leave your post. Don't run away. Conciliation pacifies great offenses. Conciliate, you know. I've seen this in churches, and now this is a little aside here, but you ever see churches where the pastor does something and everybody gets offended? What do? They leave. He's there. He's got all the buildings. He's got everything. And all the bank account, whatever it is, he's got it all, and everybody left. Well, that's a foolish thing to do. You have certain principles you have to stand for, but be careful how you do that. Just pacify it. Proverbs 15:1 says, a soft answer turns away wrath, but a harsh word stirs up anger. You know, just go along with it. And as a messenger of death is the king's wrath, but a wise man will appease him. See? Make your speeches in private. If you have to talk, make it in private. And I'm the king of the comebacks. Did you know that? Oh, yeah. I have a real comeback 2 hours later. I should have said, Georgia. Yeah, I ever make speeches in your car? You're riding along, radio's going, and your windows are all rolled up, and you're saying, that's the place to make them. Make your speeches in your private, where no one knows, no one hears. But when you're with the king, when you're with the boss, appease him. Do what he says. That's his right. And don't let it get to you. Then, so we're talking about the ego-driven leader. Then there's the opposite of that. The easygoing leader. This may be where I am. He's talking about the one who's just easygoing. He doesn't worry about everything. He says, this is verse 5. There is an evil I have seen under the sun, as an error proceeding from the ruler. Folly is set in great dignity, while the rich sit in the lowly place. I have seen servants on horses, while princes walked on the ground like servants. What he's saying is that there's an insecure leader, and he doesn't want to offend anybody, and he puts unqualified people in office. You know, you put the unqualified people in there, they're not going to be finding fault with what you do. He appoints people that will won't threaten him, you know. And so here he is, he's easygoing, but nothing gets done, you know. That's the wrong kind of leader. Ego, the easygoing. The engineered leader, verses 16 and 17. I'll jump over to 16 and 17 now. He says this, "Woe to you, land, when your king is a child, and your princes feast in the morning. Blessed are you, O land, when your king is a son of nobles, and your princes feast in the proper time for strength and not for drunkenness." He's saying that this one is appointed. It's not earned. They arranged for him to be a king, but there's no. He doesn't earn his place. You've had people like that. You had a boss like that somewhere along the line. Oh yeah. Somehow he got into that job. Maybe over you. You should have been there. He's there, but he's the kind that he has an office for political reasons. And this idea that your princes are feasting in the morning. What's wrong with that? Well, you got to do the work during the day. You know, it doesn't say you can't eat. Have a breakfast, but do you have as much breakfast and take as much time at it as you do for the evening meal? No. You eat, you get out there and get going. You got to get the work done. Well, that's what he's saying with these people. They get up in the mornings and they have feasts. They talk about a person who's an alcoholic. He drinks before 9 o'clock. You know, doesn't wait till 5 or whatever. That's the kind of thing he's talking about. They're feasting in the morning, and instead of getting the work done. And then they don't wait until after the work is done, and then they have the feast. So they Solomon says, beware of these childish and foolish leaders. They'll enrich themselves at the expense of those whom they're trying to lead. So ego-driven, easygoing, engineered. Then there's the evil leader in verses 18 and 19. He says, because of laziness and the building decays, and through idleness of hands, the house leaks. A feast is made for laughter and wine for the merry, but money answers everything. Now, this leader, he says, is lazy. He doesn't take care of things. And it's like if you don't take care of your house, if you don't keep a roof on your house especially, then it'll rot and go down. He said, this man who's supposed to be running the government or running his job, whatever he's doing, he's supposed to be doing that, but he's not doing it. He's just letting it go, and pretty soon the whole thing will fall down around his ears. See, these are terrible leaders. They said there's foolishness even in leaders. There's also foolishness in the labor pool. Here I think he's, if you've been sitting back, well, I'm not a leader, and so this is not to me. Well, here's your chance. He seems to be saying that not only for leaders, but for people who work with their hands. They can be foolish as well, like a man digging a ditch, a man digging a pit. A man who digs a pit may fall into it. He's not a big leader. He's just out there digging a hole. But if he isn't careful, if he gets foolish, he may fall into it. You know, you get too close to the edge, and pretty soon you're in. Right? At my father's funeral, he was a vet of World War I, and American Legion sent a man out there to take the flag and fold it off the coffin, you know, and give it to my mother. And here he was, and he wasn't, I knew the guy. He wasn't too sharp anyway. But here he was, and he got near the edge, and I thought he was going in. He slipped, and I thought, here he goes. But that can happen. See, if you aren't careful, a little foolishness will put you in the pit that you've been digging. Or a man tearing down a wall, he says. Whoever breaks through a wall may be bitten by a serpent. Now, serpents like to get into those walls where it's nice and cool, and they rest in there, and you're in there trying to get the block out of there or whatever, and pretty soon you get bitten by a snake. No, not careful. You have to look before you put your hand in there. That's what he's saying. So a person tearing down a wall may be hurt as well. So digging, tearing down a wall. The man quarrying stones. I've never quarried a stone. but what they do, of course, is they take a chisel and make a little mark around here, and they got a big stone out there. He said, if you aren't careful, that stone will fall on you if you're quarrying for stones. That can happen to you there. Also, he says, the man chopping wood. Now, this I can relate to. You ever chop wood? That's fun. I think, as I was thinking this, I thought, man, you know what? They tell you, make sure your children don't get things under the sink. They might get hold of drink water. You know what a farm is like? You have the chopping block is out there. The axe is always there. You know, kids running around. And you get 7 or 8 years old. I'm a big man. I can chop wood. I've done that, you know. Or, there's the horses are there. You chase the horses. You tease them. All kinds of things. I don't know how we ever lived through it, frankly. But I chop wood. And you can get hurt chopping wood. You know, you're chopping, and the thing splits and goes off that way. Or it comes back and hits you in the shin. Oh, you're falling down, and you're rubbing your shin. Oh, that can happen when you're cutting wood. You know? Or someone else can get hurt. You know, someone else standing around watching. Some little kid brother, you know. Here you are, and he can get hurt just like that. So all he's saying is even a servant person can get hurt doing that. Then he says, the man with the dull axe. Verse 10. If an axe is dull, then one does not sharpen the edge, then he must use more strength, but wisdom brings success. What he's saying is, work smarter and not harder. You have a dull axe, you can work hard, you won't get as much done. You think, well, I got to jump in here and get this done. No, stop. And sharpen the axe, and then you'll cut more and cut faster and with less strength. See? So he's saying, keep your tools sharp. Well, what does that have to do with me? I don't cut any wood. No, well, maybe he's talking about other tools that you use. You know, I have some work to do. Well, I'll get it done real fast. Well, are you keeping up with what's going on? Are you keeping up with the computer? Oh, here I am adding up some figures. Well, how about a calculator? that kind of thing. You've got a program on your computer. I'm looking at me now. Use the program right, you know. Learn how to use it. Don't just jump in there and learn how to do it. Sit up. Mary gets to Misha. You got to learn how to do that, you know. Well, I'm doing it fine. Yeah, but look at what you're doing. Well, all he's saying is, if you have a dull axe, sharpen it. Keep up on where you are. Keep up with your profession or your vocation. Find out what's out there. Read the journals. Refresher courses so that you can work smarter and not harder. So, foolishness in the little things. Foolishness in the leadership. Foolishness in the labor pool. Now, if I didn't get you before, here you are. Foolishness in language. 11 through 14. Talks about the tongue. You know? The untamed tongue is the first one. Verse 11. A servant may bite when he is not charmed. A babbler is no different. What do you mean a serpent may bite? Well, he's talking about snake charmers. If you're charming a snake and you use whatever you use, the music or the swaying or whatever, you'd use that and you get the snake charmed and then you can touch him. But make sure you got him charmed before you touch him is what he's saying. Well, the same is true of a babbler. If you're going to charm a snake, make sure he's charmed. But also, make sure your tongue is under control before you let it loose. Put your mind in gear before you start your tongue. What about that one? You know? Untamed, your tongue can be a problem. Make sure you're thinking before you're talking. Were you ever in a car with someone and they have to make a comment about everything that goes on. Oh, a stop sign, a Volkswagen, everything that goes on. Had to say something. Yeah. Well, I've seen that. Well, that's the person, that's the untamed tongue. Talk, 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 talk all the time without saying anything. Then there's the unkind tongue, verse 12. The words of a wise man's mouth are gracious, but the lips of a fool shall swallow him up. Is there anything more destructive than a tongue? James says, who can tame it? Nobody can tame it. You can't tame it apart from God. Do you ever wish you'd take something back? As soon as it left your mouth, oh, I wish I hadn't said that. Why did I say that? You know? And you worry about it. Think about it. Can't do it. Can't take it back. You can't unring the bell, you know. Oh, I shouldn't have rung the bell. Well, it's still going, no, all around. You know? Can't do it. That's the unkind tongue. You say something wrong, and it's bad. Then there's the unwise tongue. Verse 13. He says, the words of the mouth begin with foolishness, and the end of his talk is raving madness. The words begin with foolishness. They'll wind up in a bad way. There's just no correcting the tongue that's gone wild. It winds up in raving madness. Then there's the undisciplined tongue. So verse 14, a fool also multiplies words. That's very simple. You ever look at epitaphs on tombstones? We do that. Melanie and I look at some. We've seen some nice ones. There's a joke about one that says the hypochondriac has on her tombstone, see, I told you I was sick. Not bad. Melanie and I found one up in northern Florida. It was this. Remember, friend, as you walk by, as you are now, so once was I. As I am now, you surely will be. Prepare thyself to follow me. That's a good one. But here's one for this subject here. Beneath the stone, a lump of clay, lies Arabella Young, who on the 24th of May began to hold her tongue. Has a long fuse on it, but you shouldn't get it. Yeah. She stopped talking finally. Mm-hmm. So the untamed tongue, the unkind tongue, the unwise tongue, the undisciplined tongue, then the unreasonable tongue. No man knows what is to be. Who can tell him what will be after him? The labor of fools wearies them, for they do not even know how to get to the city. Now, Solomon's making a joke here. A little Old Testament humor. And he says, here's a man. He's telling the future. He's telling everybody what's going to be. Well, who can know that? Then he says, this guy who's telling you what's going to be tomorrow, he doesn't even know the present. He can't even find his home. You know, that's the kind of joke he was at. A little humor. He doesn't know his way home. That's how foolish that guy is. Unreasonable. We would say, probably, that he doesn't know his head from a hole in the ground. That's the kind of thing he's talking about. So there's the untamed, unkind, unwise, undisciplined, unreasonable. Then there's the unfaithful tongue. Do not curse the king even in your thoughts. Do not curse the rich even in your bedroom. For a bird of the air may carry your voice, and a bird in flight may tell the matter. What? Even when you're in your bedroom, nobody else is around, don't utter something that you don't want to get back to the king, he says, because a little birdie might tell him. Remember, somebody says to you, I know that. Well, how did you know? Well, a little birdie told me. That comes out of here, you know, right out of Ecclesiastes. Well, a bird might tell him. A little birdie told him. So he's saying, be careful what you say anytime. Now, I think this would fit in here. In gossip, beware of gossip. You know Hee Haw. You ever watch Hee Haw? Don't tell me you didn't. And there you are. Had that little group of ladies in there, and they would say, now, we're not ones to go around spreading rumors. We're really not the gossipy kind. You'll never hear one of us repeating gossip, so better be sure and listen close the first time. We're not going to repeat gossip. Well, that's what he's saying. Don't be a gossip. You know, or maybe here's a way you can tell some gossip. You do it spiritually. Do you know Sister So-and-so has a problem? Now, I'm just telling you this so you can pray for her. And you've got to know all the details so you can pray. We always spread a lot of gossip in prayer meetings, you know. Oh, yeah, this is it, this. Oh, tell me more so I can pray. You know. Watch it, see. And watch to whom you say things. You know? Someone may say something about somebody, and then you add yours, you know. Oh, yeah, I remember that. Oh, yeah, she did so-and-so. The great philosopher, my mother, said this. A dog that will bring a bone will carry a bone. You know? If someone brings something to you, whatever you say, they're going to carry it away too. So be careful of them. He says, while speaking about the kingdom, about the company, about the church, about the family, here's a good rule. Anything that's praise goes in, goes down and out. You're in the structure somewhere. If you hear something that's good, you tell the people under you about it, and then tell it out to everybody else. That's praise. Praise goes down and out. But criticism goes in and up. You don't tell about the criticism in the family. You don't tell criticism about your husband to your children. No. Praise, yes. Oh, tell, did you know your father did so-and-so? And they go tell the neighbors, you know. But criticism? No, you go, that goes in and up, see. Go to the boss, go to the next boss. Go to somebody who can do something about it, see. That's what we do there. So praise goes down and out, but criticism goes in and up. So he's not really talking here about the tongue, is he? It's not the tongue. That's not the problem. The problem is the heart. Out of the abundance of the heart, the mouth speaks. Proverbs 4:23 says, keep your heart with all diligence, for out of it spring the issues of life. So he's talked to us about being foolish, a lot of the foolish things that we can do and that will ruin us if we aren't careful. So his advice is, use wisdom in your daily life. Well, how do you do that? Well, there's a verse. And I'd like for us to say this verse together. We can stay seated, but say it together, because this is a very important verse. This summarizes the entire thing. Let's say it together. If any of you lacks wisdom, let him ask of God, who gives to all liberally and without reproach, and it will be given to him. You need wisdom? Let's walk in wisdom. And how do you get wisdom? You get wisdom by asking God for it. That's not just a Bible verse. That's a lifeline that God has sent us. If you want wisdom, get wisdom, and then live by the wisdom. It's the God's daily message to you, not just in times when you're facing major crises, but even the little things. Lord, keep my mouth. See? It should be a daily prayer. Here's a prayer right here. Lord, give me wisdom today. Help me not to do or say anything foolish, because I'm naturally foolish in my heart. Lord, I can't be wise without you. So if you want to live a life of wisdom, you want to avoid the foolish mistakes and choices, then make this prayer your daily prayer.